Hi everybody, welcome to the Centurion Running Podcast. My name's James Elson. This is a recap of the 2022 Wendover Woods 50. I'll tell you it's going to be nice and short, but just like the last one, it probably won't be. I end up rambling on and on and on. And for those of you that ran the race and are interested in the event, it's probably reasonably interesting in places. For those that didn't, I'll try and include some anecdotes that make it come alive a bit, but bear with me. I started the last episode with a quick recap news and what's happening at Centurion, and I'm going to do the same again now. It's a bit shorter this time, I think, but just an update. Apparently it's proving useful. I'm not sure everyone wants to read our newsletters. They are quite long, so I'll try and keep it to the point. But starting with the events, Wendover Woods 50 wrapped up our 2022 season. So that's all 10 races done for the year. We are into 2023 with the events now. And not much has changed really in the last 3 or 4 weeks since we recorded. The only difference is that the Wendover Woods Weekender for 2023, which is July 7th to the 9th, is now open for entries. Once again, while it's fresh in the memory, you've got a 10-mile for the first time on the Sunday morning. You've got 50K night race, the 50-miler, 100-miler, and the kids' races all happening over that three-day period. We're going to have an event village. We're going to have brands coming to Expo. We're going to have food and drink concessions. We're going to have guest speakers. We're going to have demo gear, guided runs, you name it. So come down and camp with us over that weekend. Bring the whole family. There's a race distance for everybody, so come on down. And then event entries are now open all the way through to what will be the last race of 2023, the Autumn 100. That's taking place the middle weekend of October 2023 as usual, and that opens for entries next Saturday, or this Saturday, which off the top of my head is the 20th of November. I might be out by a day, you'll need to check. This coming Saturday at 10 a.m. Then at that point, we'll have everything open for 2023. The One Slam event is next up for us. That kicks off 1st of January and it's the virtual. We're about to announce the coaching webinars that we're going to run through that One Slam period for everyone that's entered into it. The idea of the Slam, obviously, is to kick everybody's year off in a really productive and exciting way, give everyone focus and motivation through the darker months, and give everyone a leg up into the 2023 season. And Robbie and the team of coaches here at Centurion are going to help you do that. They're going to help you plan your training and how to break One Slam down and get the most out of it. So that should be good. So if you haven't signed up for that, get yourself involved. Then it's into the real in-person racing season. Stay tuned for an update on 100 Hills 50K in the next week or so. We are looking at giving the option to 100 extra people who might want to run with us in March the chance to do so. So there's me being trying to be coy about it, but I'll just come straight out and say it. We will be launching another 100 entries for the 100 Hills 50K, which takes place on the 18th of March 2023. It's a sellout event. It's been sold out for quite a while now. So if you missed the chance and have been eyeing it up, it's a good opportunity to jump in. No idea how quickly those places will go. We'll tell everybody via social media, the mail outs and the website, how and when those entries will be opening. But they'll be end of November, beginning of December time. So 2 or 3 weeks time, there'll be 100 extra places for 100 Hills 50K. Nothing else super pressing. I think North Downs Way 50 is probably down to about 100 places remaining, but things are moving along, as I mentioned in the last podcast. Store-wise, we had an amazing day 2 Saturdays ago when we opened our in-person shop, which is here in Wheat Hampstead in Hertfordshire, from 10 till 3. We had a guided run with myself and Sophie Grant, one of our leading athletes and Centurion coach. And it was absolutely buzzing all day in the shop. It was fantastic. By far the busiest one we've had. The next one is on the 10th of December. So if you're shopping for Christmas presents, or you want to come down and have a coffee and a chat, or you want to come on a guided run, there'll be another one happening that day. Get involved, go over to the website, the store website, which you can find linked from the top of centurionrunning.com or centurionrunningstore.com, and you can get yourself registered for the guided run, which is free, or make plans to come over and see us on that day. New brands, we've just taken receipt of Deckshell socks, waterproof socks. I've been spending some time in them as I prep for the spine race. Thermarest incoming soon. There'll be sleeping bags and mats pertinent to the spine and then further multi-day events. We're just continuing to expand our range to make it as appropriate as possible to our sport and our niche area of the sport. So offering good advice and hand selecting the kit from all of the major brands that we rate the most. So you can get the advice online or you can come see us in person on the 10th of December. I think that's kind of it for the minute. We'll move swiftly on to Wendover Woods 50. This has been our end of season finale since 2016, which is the first edition of this race. Giving a little bit of history first, which has been the pattern through this year as I've done these post-race podcasts. We obviously had the South Downs Way 50, which followed the North Downs Way 50, which was our first ever event. So 2011, South Downs Way 50 came in 2013. And the 100-mile slam was really popular. So we had the 400-milers going alongside those 250s. And it made sense, obviously, given the popularity of those 50s, to add two more and create a 50-mile grand slam. That was the idea. And there was a bit of a gap at the end of our season. We had North Downs Way 100 in its traditional home the first weekend of August, and then the Autumn 100 in mid-October. And so it just, there was this big gap between North Downs and Autumn, and then nothing at all until early April, this huge ocean of time between the end of one season and the start of the next, really. Which, don't get me wrong, was pretty great from a kickback and relax point of view and get prepared for the following year, but it just seemed too big a gap, to be honest. And we wanted to bridge it a bit, so we looked to put a 50-miler in November. The two 50s we added in 2016 were the Chiltern Wonderland and Wendover Woods. The Chiltern made sense to go in September because it's in the same area as, and even shares the same course as, some of the Autumn 100, which is 4 weeks later. So it's kind of a last long run plus partial recce for the Autumn 100 in the same area, just made sense. And actually its home in September has made it one of, if not our most popular races. Whereas November felt better for Wendover because where it is would mean it wasn't victim to things like the river flooding or horrific weather conditions, you know, blowing up the race. But unfortunately, we weren't able to foresee, because the woods drain really, really well. They're a big chalk ridge that actually form part of the ridgeway. And they're steep all along one side and they drain off pretty well. What doesn't drain so well is the field that we base everything out of. So we've had a couple of close calls over the years where the field has effectively been flooded with a load of sitting water on it. And that's caused us massive stress coming into race day once or twice. So whilst it looked a safe bet for November at the time, that is a large part of the reason why we're moving this race back to July from next year. But I'll come into that in more detail towards the end of this pod. So Wendover Woods 50 was the last course we came up with, really, the last 50-mile course we came up with. Drew Sheffield, course manager, I think would probably be the best way to describe Drew. Many of you have been around the events will know Drew well and recognise him. He's the RD at Chiltern Wonderland. But Drew was living in the area and we were running a lot. You know, Wendover's only less than 40 minutes from where we're based, and we would train there a lot. It's just a fantastic, albeit quite small, area of woodland. And it's unique, really, in the south because it is steep. There are substantial ascents and descents, more so than almost anywhere else within a couple of hours drive really of there, and hence we would travel there to train, because you know if you're entered to UTMB or Leadville or Western States or any of those races we were running and interested in at the time, really without travelling to UK mountains, it provided and still provides the best option for training. So we spent hours, days, weeks of our lives knocking around in Wendover Woods, and there are so many paths and interconnecting kind of trods and pathways that it's possible to create, it has been possible to create quite a substantial length loop within what is a very small geographical area. So the woods themselves are about 2 by 2.5 miles, and you know, it's quite compact, but the trick with the Wendover Woods loop was to make it long enough to be interesting and feel exciting, not short enough that it just, you know, became more of a psychological battle than a physical one, whilst not having the course kind of intersect itself too many times. Because the more you have points in a course, on a lapped course, touching or within eyeball distance of another section, the more problem you've got with people unintentionally cutting the course or wandering off and finding themselves on a different part of the trail and joining the course later on, and there being loads of different issues. So it took a long time to design this one. Drew very much formed the outline of it. He got it 90% of the way there by continuing to refine a loop over and over and over again. What we then do is look at the map and sort of say, well, you can, this section kind of touches this section, but if we shift to this trail, we'll come out just slightly further down. So when you emerge out of the later section, you won't see the runners earlier on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's bloody hard to do. And it took a lot of work. And actually, Drew sent a message yesterday, the day after this year's race, with a Strava screenshot from 2015, titled Secret Squirrel, which is the best part of 9 miles, and the shape of the loop without being the final loop. And we then jumped on the course together and cut one or two things out, added a couple of other bits. But really, someone said to me on Saturday, oh, you know, have you changed the course over the years? And the truth is, we haven't changed any of it. The only one minor change was just to protect an area of banking that had become heavily eroded. In conjunction with the woods, we decided to take that small section out and shift it just a little bit further down. But the course hasn't changed. And honestly, it wouldn't be very easy to change, because we are maximising the use of the trails that within the woods themselves. So it's a 10-mile loop, and we cut the first loop slightly shorter so that the field could spread out a bit more as you hit the flat road. A very short road section at the start of the course just to break everything up a bit and avoid the single track. And then subsequently, loops 2 through 5 are slightly longer than 10 miles. They're more like 10.2. So overall, the course is 51 to 52 miles, but close enough within a 50. We did worry a little bit that it would be out of reach for some of our runners, just because of the amount of elevation change. You know, our next hilliest course has 5,500 feet in 50 miles. One of the objectives with the Wendover loop we had on top of everything else was to make sure it just cleared the 10,000 feet mark. And to put that in perspective, you know, it's the same amount of climb as Lakeland 50. So it's substantial. And we did worry that it was going to become the sort of race that would be out of reach for our regular 50-mile finishers. So we extended the cutoff out by 2 hours to allow for that. But those who've done the loop in reverse can testify to the fact that the course itself, in the direction it goes, is very runnable along the flat and the descents. They're pretty gentle gradients, generally good underfoot, and allow you to run or trot or make up a lot of time. You know, even late on in the race, those moving well can just trot a lot of the descents, and the ascents tend to be very short-lived but quite steep. If you do the course in reverse, you get very short, steep descents and long, gradual uphills, meaning that you can't move well on any of it. So that was the final sort of intention, really, with the course, is to definitely have it flow in one way to make it optimal in terms of speed, despite the elevation change involved. Underfoot, the course can change quite dramatically, but it's never bad. There are sections of bridleway which can get churned up, and in the wet, they can become quite muddy, but they're often avoidable because they're the wider sections. And even on the very wettest days or at the end of the very wettest months, the course is generally still pretty good going. And this year's was a case in point, really. I went over there on the Monday to check out a couple of bits, to cut a few things back, and to post a couple of letters and to the residents. And the course, I mean, it had been raining very heavily for a couple of weeks. The field was wet and the course was pretty wet, but it was still good. By Saturday morning of this year, the course had almost completely dried out. There were one or two very short sections of sticky mud, but generally speaking, it has literally never been better underfoot. The field itself was pretty dry. We didn't even need the matting to get the cars on the field this year. And weather on race day dawned 9 degrees with a fresh breeze, especially up in Trig Point Field, which is at the top of the woods where we have the parking and the start-finish marquee. It's just outside the woods and is in a big open field. And the runners immediately come out of the field into the woods and get the shelter off the woods. I mean, in the woods itself, you rarely get wind, and it's very sheltered. Temperatures topped out at sort of 14, 15 degrees in the afternoon and dropped off to kind of 10, 11 again at night. I mean, pretty much perfect. And I've just written the race report, and I've said in it that I don't know what the odds would have been at the start of the year for this, but we have received a sum total of 45 minutes of rain in the entire of the 2022 race season. But bear in mind that includes 500 milers, 450 milers and a 50K. So you can have a stab at just how many cumulative hours of racing that is. We've had 45 minutes of rain, and that came at the very start of this year's Autumn 100. It's been exceptional, and it's allowed everyone to enjoy their racing a lot more because they've stayed dry. It's also extremely worrying, clearly, that, you know, the weather has already changed this substantially, you know, in the short time, the 10, what are we, 12, 13 years we've been operating. It's gone from, I mean, it just is absolutely incredible to think that would have been possible at the start of the year. Obviously, as I say, the flip side of the worrying nature of that is that it has made for more enjoyable racing conditions, you know, across the course of the year. We haven't either combined the boiling hot weekends with our races. The one time that happened was Wendover Woods night 50K. And just by a stroke of luck, obviously, that happened to be the one event that took place overnight only when the temperatures had dropped off. So we don't count our chickens. That was the most incredible season weather-wise we'll ever have, I'm quite sure. And yeah, we finished it off in style at Wendover last weekend. So maybe I've given a good indication of what the course is like. Course records. Over the years, we've had lots of good calibre runners coming to run this one. And I think that's because a couple of reasons. It's the end of the season. So if you've done a key summer race, you can roll out of that and then come and have some fun here at the end of the year. It's also appealed to a different runner. And the men, in fact, the top three overall finishers, the first two men and the leading lady, all came from up north. To come and run. Actually, that's not strictly true, but I'll explain more. So Jamie Rutherford, the men's winner, came down from Sheffield, trained in the Peak District. Scott Newburn, who was second, lives in Shap. He runs Newings Lodge in Shap, where I regularly stay when I visit the lakes for work or for adventure. and came down from the lakes. And Fiona Pascal is actually from Somerset, so not strictly true what I just said. However, Fee does spend a lot of time running the Lake District. Her sister Beth, who many of you will know, has moved to Braithwaite, lives in the lake, so she spends a lot of time up there, and she became the women's 24-hour Lake District record holder earlier this summer, hence me sort of thinking of her as a Lake District-based runner, even though she's actually based in Somerset. But over the years, we've had lots of fell and mountain runners have a go at this one, and the results kind of speak for themselves. The men's course record from Stuart Leaney, who we sort of used to joke back in the day as we'd call him the King of Wendover. I mean, he really was the King of Wendover. He won a couple of times here. He ran his course record in 2018, I want to say. Let me just pull up the data because I don't want to get it wrong. But Stu was a fast road marathoner who turned his hand to the trails and focused really on specifically shorter, faster, steeper trail races and mountain events. 7:16:59 in 2018 he ran. That time, nobody's got near it. And he then went on to win Wendover Woods 100. I think he broke 19 hours for that. He won the race by 4 or 5 hours, I can't remember. It was an absolutely ridiculous performance. And he very much still is the King of Wendover. I'll never forget the second loop of that 2018 course record. He came round in about 1:22, maybe 1:21 high. It was a time that I had a go at as a single lapper on the Monday just to see how close I could get. And I think I was about 30 seconds slower than him for one 10-mile loop. And he'd run that as a loop two on his way to 7:16:59. Don't get me wrong, I'm no elite runner, but it put it in perspective for me just how hard he'd gone and how well he'd run that year. The women's course record, Amy Sarkis, 8:50:59. She improved on Sam Amend's 8:51 dead. So she literally took a second off Sam's time in 2018. So both course records were from 2018 coming into this year. If I look at the races, the women's race first, with respect to all the other ladies signed up, there was one elite level runner, Fiona Pascal, who I've just mentioned. And you wouldn't necessarily know that from looking at Fee on, say, DUV, where she's had a couple of wins and second places at Endurance Life events. There's no depth in her performances there because she's focused on things that won't appear on there. She's had a win at the Felsman. She won the Tour de Helvellyn. She, as I mentioned earlier, set a new women's Lake District 24-hour record. That's the most summits within a 24-hour period that you can manage. I believe she managed 68. Think of that as a Bob Graham on acid or Bob Graham and a half. It's essentially all the Bob Graham round peaks and then just chuck on, in her case, another 26 summits on top of that. So even if you're not familiar with the Lake District 24-hour route or record, you've probably heard of the Bob Graham. You're probably aware of how difficult and epic a challenge that is. And Fee, you know, basically ran one and a half of them consecutively within 24 hours. And that was a record that had been previously held by many of the leading lights in women's ultra running here in the UK, particularly mountain ultra trail running. And shows a level of class that we very rarely see here in the UK, and we certainly very rarely see in our events. So with respect to all previous comers here, on the women's side of things, and this year's field, Fee is what I would call an international class athlete, and it was going to be very interesting to see what she could do because she's obviously brilliant on the hills and the fells. And sure enough, she didn't disappoint. She went off in the lead. I'll talk about how the men went off in a minute. But she sat back from everything going on around her. She ran her own race. She certainly didn't overreach early on. She didn't hammer the second and third loops just to get them done. She looked comfortable, totally in control. When she cleared her pack out at the end of loop four, there were a hell of a lot of gel packets, and she was taking tailwind at the checkpoint. So she was taking a massive amount of carbohydrate on board, so fueling really well. She looked totally comfortable all the way through to she finished the race. And particularly on the last lap, she'd reeled in almost all the guys as well by that point. There were three more in front of her that seemed like they could go. And she, sure enough, with a couple of kilometres to go, she put herself into third person. I hate comparing how women have done against the men in kind of the overall context of thing. But it bears relevance here because she ran from kind of 19th back in the field to finish third over the line behind just the two guys. Massive new women's course record, 8:33 she ran, so she took 17 minutes off the existing course record and didn't honestly look troubled at any point by anything. And and obviously we could flatter ourselves with saying, oh yeah, this was her focus race. It definitely was not a focus race for Fee. She's got eyes on other things in 2023, and this was just a kind of an end of season solid run out, see how she was doing. She certainly came in focused and wanted a result, but let's just say it wasn't a focus race. So absolutely fantastic to see, inspirational. And more than anything, and this echoes also in the men's race winner, just unbelievably polite and humble, stopping to thank marshals out on course, the volunteers, just happy to chat with everybody at the end. Just a very classy all-round performance, an athlete. So huge congratulations to Fee Pascal. Thank you for coming to race, Fee, and a superb result. What was interesting in the rest of the women's race is that, or the women's podium at least, the second and third place runners also ran strong throughout, extremely consistent, and held their positions from start to finish. So Una Miles, Irish athlete, she went out quite hard. She wasn't too far behind Fee early on. And she did fade, but she didn't fade anywhere near as much as others. And that's borne out again. You can see that most clearly in the overall positions, as in all comers, including men, because she held her gender position a second all day. She was 23rd through the first checkpoint and gained places at every step of the way after lap two to finish 13th person over the line. Her time of 9:34, very solid. She was delighted with that. She had a very solid run indeed. And she looked very strong and smiled throughout, as she's wont to do. Third place went to Sophie Power. Listeners of this podcast will be familiar with Sophie. She is in charge over at She Races. She's busy working on promoting women's participation in the sport and making sure women's participation is on an equal footing to men's and that representation is there. So she's got a very powerful voice, and she's echoed that with a very powerful performance here. She's fresh off the back of a 24-hour Team GB run at the European Championships, and she's turned that into a third place on a course which, let's just say, is slightly different in profile to that. And she came home in 9:43, just 9 minutes back of Una. Again, she held position all day, and a tremendous result for her. Smashing run. And she said to us at the finish, that was her first ever podium finish. I think she must mean at our events, because I'm sure she's won other things, but she's certainly run a lot of our races, and she was over the moon with that performance. So congratulations to first, second and third lady. I'm just going to mention fourth place Stacey Sangster as well, because much like the three ahead of her, she was super consistent all day. She pipped the 10-hour mark by 11 seconds and finished fourth. So congratulations to her as well. In the men's race, I don't think we've ever seen packs of guys go off the way they did here. It was like watching a cycling event. like a criterium almost. There was a group at the front of 6 to 7 guys, headed up initially by the Shannon brothers, Mark and Kevin, who've run this race particularly many, many times between them, the 50K and the 50 mile, and know the course as well as anybody else. And some other sort of, some of the other leading contenders, Pierre Meslet, French athlete who has finished in the top 10 at the MDS before, Tim Bradley, who looked quite strong from the outset, and Scott Newburn and Jamie Rutherford, who I've already mentioned went on to finish second and first respectively, were there, but hanging back a little bit, sort of tactically more aware, perhaps not leading the pace, but content just to sort of let others do the work and sit on. It was also apparent there were quite a few guys in there early on working way too hard and who weren't going to survive the pace. And that's absolutely typical here. There was a little bit of a gap, and then another 5 or 6 guys came through. And certainly on the first lap, it looked like it was going to be an absolute suffer fest as things inevitably obliterated as the race went on. Sure enough, that happened. My day was a little different to usual in that I was with our media guys, Steve Ashworth on video and Pierre Pape on photography, and we essentially took some footage at the top of the steepest climb on the course, knocking around mile 8 on loop 1, went back to the field and then reversed a loop. So we got to watch the race unfold. It took about 5.5-6 hours to get round the loop. We essentially watched the race unfold as the runners came back through us over and over and over again. It was very interesting to witness the ebb and flow and the highs and the lows of the runners as they came past. Jamie Rutherford gradually sort of floated to the top. He looked very efficient, very comfortable, extremely similar to Fiona in terms of outlook, attitude, how humble he was, everything else. And honestly, as well as Scott ran in second, Jamie, after lap 3, never really looked troubled. It was Jamie against himself, and Scott, Pierre, Tim were very much racing for second place. Jamie, it was noted to me by Liz Sheffield, who's actually Drew's mum, was our on-course marshal at the 1 mile mark to make sure people made the correct turns there. Jamie had actually stopped running to thank her personally. On his final lap, I'm sure he didn't know exactly how much of a margin he had over second. He just is that kind of guy. So thanks to him for being classy and humble in the same way as Fiona was. He ran home in 8:05. It was his first ultra. I think he'd really surprised himself. Obviously, he's a very quick guy over the short stuff. He'd had a great time. His brother was also running, Simon. He ended up finishing 11th, so Jamie stuck around till Simon finished, and it was good to chat to him and sort of get a picture of what he's up to. Massive congrats to Jamie. The last loop was definitely where the excitement was. Scott Newburn had definitely played the tactical game, was strong, and was looking for the moment to pounce on Pierre, who was in second at that point, and did so a couple of Ks into the final loop and ran away to finish second in 8:20. Pierre was passed just a couple of kilometres from the finish by Fiona, and he finished third male in 8:35. Thomas Wright, who had a superb race from a pacing point of view, he again made places all the way up to the finish, finished fourth in 8:39. Tim Bradley was fifth in 8:42. So it's quite a compact field. More guys going under 9 hours than usual. Nobody going under 8. Let's just remind ourselves again, Stuart Leaney's course record, 7:16. There are some high-caliber runners in this field. It just goes to show how good, not taking nothing away from Jamie and Scott and the other leading guys here, just goes to show how stout Stuart's time here was and is. As the race moves back to July, will it become more difficult because it will be hotter? Will it become easier because it's more likely to be drier? We don't know. But that was the race at the front end of things this year. Thoroughly enjoyable to watch. And as I've said many times now, great to see two humble, classy winners doing a fantastic job of things for us this year. I'm just bringing up my report so I can remind myself of the age group winners. A couple of other mentions before I come on to the age categories. This was also the Grand Slam 50 finale. And in the Slam, we've had one man all year who has set the tone. Mark Lynch, he was the leading slammer home again here. He has already won the 100-mile slam, won the North Downsway 100, and now he's won the 50-mile slam with a cumulative time of 33 hours and 42 minutes. Will we ever see that again? Maybe, but for someone to be that consistent over that period of time is frankly staggering. And he's exhausted and emotional, both at the end of autumn and this one, and rightly so. He deserves a very long rest. Our huge congratulations to Mark. Thanks for being part of the adventure and the journey and for inspiring us all this year. And in the women's, a runner who's been just as consistent as Mark all year, albeit only in the 50 milers, Rachel Lindley. She was 8:10, 8:48, 8:35. And when I told you that we moved the cutoff of Wendover Woods back 2 hours to 15 hours instead of 13, because that's how much more difficult we thought this course would be, she ran 10:43 here, almost exactly 2 hours off of her other 50-mile times, bearing out our case, really, for that extra 2 hours on the Wendover Woods cutoff. Rachel won the Women's Slam in 36:18, cumulative time. Special shout-out to Sarah Hill, who, after 3 and 4 loops of this course, was absolutely done. She was second place in the Slam. She's previously won the South Downsway 50. She's a fantastic runner, was clearly suffering with an injury. Not too serious, but definitely not, you know, working at full capacity. And she had the guts to get out there and just get it done in 12 hours, miles off what she can achieve as a runner. But she got it done all the same to complete her slam in 39:02. It was a great year also for one other man I want to mention, finishing in sort of the higher up the rankings, Luigi Fumero. Luigi became the only runner to have finished all 6 editions of the Wendover Woods 50. He's now finished his 5th Grand Slam of 50s and did so in 38:38. Massive congratulations to him. And not quite our final slam finish of the year, but close to it, in a cumulative time of 50:34. David Roots became our first Vet 70 finisher of Wendover Woods 50 in 14:36, but then also, of course, the Grand Slam. He's our first Vet 70, male or female, finisher of the Grand Slam. Did so in a cumulative time 50:34. We had 50 Grand Slam finishers this year. Final one, James Terry. Big shout out to him. He finished with 8 minutes to go. James marks almost all of our courses. He marks all of our courses when he's not running. He's one of our track officials. He's a massive member of our community, hugely valued member of our community, and obviously an absolute delight to see him. He was final finisher this weekend, to see him over the line. So thanks to James for all his ongoing work, and congratulations to him for getting this one done. In the other vet categories, first male vet 40, Tom Harvey in 9:06. First M vet 50 plus man, Steve Chamberlain in 10:41. And first male vet 60, Neil Brooks in 11:17. Neil's time takes an hour and I think 16 minutes off the previous vet 60 course record. So that is quite some run from Neil Brooks there. In the women's, Stacey Sangster took the first FVET 40. She was first vet in 9:59, fourth lady overall. And first female vet 50 was Claire Howard in 11 hours flat. Another huge age category record for Claire. She has had quite the year and continues to show what can be done in the age cats. She's so consistent and she always makes the previews. You know she's always going to have a solid race. Last year, as we neared the 15-hour cutoff for this race, there was, I think there were 5 runners who we could see coming around the side of the field on the trail within two and a half minutes of the finish line. What happens is you run around the exterior of the field in the woods. You come out of the woods, you cross a stile into the field, and you run a couple of minutes through the finish line. It was completely obvious to us that these people were going to be within a few seconds, one way or the other, of finishing the race. Now, the fly in the ointment, if you will, is that stile. You can't just all hop over the stile at the same time and leg it across the field. It's not possible. And this might sound absolutely ridiculous. So you've been running for 15 hours and a stile can be the difference between finishing and not. Well, Joe Birkett crossed the line in 14:58.17. So she had just over 100 seconds to spare. Dave Lewis crossed the line in 14:59.33. Georgina Townsend, 14:59.48. And Janice Coghlan-Hibbert, 14:59.55. 5 seconds inside the cutoff, with one person who was last across the stile, Leslie Lewis, home in 15 hours and 3 seconds. She was also running the Grand Slam. Just have a think about that for a minute, and that if we'd moved the finish line about 20 metres further down the field, or she hadn't had to queue for that stile, or she hadn't made a small course error out on the route, she would have finished, and she would have finished the slam. Leslie's, a lot of people were pretty upset about that. They can't understand why we'd hold such a rigid cutoff. But the whole point of the cutoffs is that there is the sense of achievement for making it within the time allowed is heightened and upheld by the fact that there is an overall cutoff. You don't just get to carry on forever. Similarly, I've explained many times, if you allow someone 5 seconds extra, what about the person that finishes 5 seconds after that? Do you allow a minute? If you allow a minute, maybe you should allow 5 or 10 or half an hour. You've got to draw a line. And we've taken the Comrades approach of saying, and the Western States approach of saying, yep, the cutoff is 15 hours. That is it. That is not a second over. And we've had people finish a second under and a second over. What was so inspiring was that Leslie immediately signed up for 2022 and she came back. She wanted to keep a low profile. She didn't want a fuss made. She directly told me that. But she grafted. She grafted in training and she grafted all day. And every time I saw her, she was stoic and wasting no time, moving as efficiently as she possibly could. And as she came in off loop four, there was plenty of time for her. She had almost 4 hours for the final loop. She had a quick chat with one of the volunteers where it was recommended she might have a cup of tea and a bit of a rest. And I said, absolutely under no circumstances was she to do that. Please exit the tent as quickly as possible. And please, please get this done for you and for us. And she came home in 14:25.53. So she should be a shining beacon of everything that is good in this sport. It is very easy to sort of to say, oh, you know, we should have changed the rules and bent them a little bit and allowed her the 3 seconds. But Leslie's just proved, I mean, she didn't want the medal. She didn't want to be first unofficial finisher. She didn't finish the race. And she came back this year and she finished the race. And just for take a minute to sort of think about how special that is and will feel to her this week and forevermore as that huge monkey is lifted from her shoulders. So huge congratulations to Leslie. She again is a regular volunteer of us. She's poured hours into the sport and it was an absolutely brilliant sort of thing to happen in the final hour. Massive shout out as ever to the volunteers who made this happen. I've noticed immense pleasure to see Hale Lane Checkpoint now being referred to as Hale's Kitchen, where I think it will be promptly renamed forever. Kevin Stone and Yana Goldsack, they're down there again for us this year. I think they were there all summer for Wendover Woods 50K night race. They've certainly run the event before. They bring the energy. You know, everyone who went through Hale Lane this year will have seen them 4 times, 5 times even, and have had their infectious energy. And they sort of were in charge down there. And then a whole bunch of other super experienced volunteers come and go and were there for their shifts. Up in the Trig Point, we had people parking cars at 6 a.m. using glow sticks in the field in the fog. through to people still helping us clear the finish away at 1 a.m. You know, rubbish bags and, you know, whatever else. Just an immense effort. To our course markers, Nick Green and Kit Yee, who helped Drew and I on the Friday mark the course, and to Ammon Peep Grass on the Saturday morning, who went and checked it all before the first runners went through. And to Fern Parker and her accompanying partner, I'm not sure of his name. Thanks to both of you for sweeping the course at the end of the race, making sure everyone came home safe and sound. We've been doing MVP, volunteer, most valuable player volunteer, for throughout this year. Several of them were at this race. Ivor Hewitt was there again. He was just cheering on for his wife Cara this time, who finished a Grand Slam. Ian Robertson was up at Trig Point Field. All the runners will have known that because Ian bought all of his whiteboards, or his blackboards rather, and had baked half a metric tons worth of different types of gluten-free, vegan and other baked goods in a performance that frankly just staggered. But MVP this time, I'm going to give to Kevin Stone. Kev brings the energy, as I've said. Again, the type of guy for whom nothing is too much trouble. He has been there for us for years and years and years. And again, you know, will act in the best interests of the runners without necessarily even being told to do so. Literally nothing is too much trouble. This year, for example, we started running out of supplies. Kev coordinated without really even troubling us to go and top things up and keep the levels going and make sure runners from front to back. And with respect to Kev, he isn't the fastest in the gang. In fact, I think he might have been the final finisher at the previous Wendover's Night 50K. He knows what it's like to be the last runner out on course. He knows what it's like to come into a checkpoint and find supplies dwindling or not what the front runners get. And he is committed, as we try to be, to uphold the fact that every runner, first to last, gets the same treatment. And Kev knows what it's like, and to have somebody like that who can do that and who knows what it's like from that end of the spectrum, who's willing to commit this level of time and energy for no reason other than that he just loves it, is pretty special. In fact, I've just pulled up the results from the 2019 Wendover's Night 50K final finisher, 132nd place, Kevin Stone, 9:19:33. So there you go. I have got a good memory. So Kev, thanks. We love you. Please keep coming. Please keep doing what you're doing. Hale's Kitchen is yours forever if you want it. And to everyone else who helped down at that checkpoint and across this weekend, a huge thank you to you. Final orders of business. Steve Ashworth was shooting video for us in the woods all weekend. He's put together a two-minute clip that's on the race report and features highlights of the incredible light and conditions we had in the woods on what was a wonderful autumn day. He has also got some other footage that we'll be sharing in due course, but for now there's a couple of minutes of recap film from him. The race report is now up. The results are finalised and have been shared. You can find the photos from Pierre Pape, our on-course photographer. They are free to download, to help yourselves to them. And the finish line pictures from Stu and Ross March, as usual, are absolutely magnificent, and they're available via the race report too. There'll be more podcasts this year. The plan is to start chatting with some of our athletes and our coaches, create a bit more content in this off-season. But we are so grateful to all of you who played a part in 2022. It's been a great year following on from the two COVID ravaged ones. This was a really, really great year. It was so refreshing and important for us to get the community back together, to get the mass starts going again, to get the buzz around the events back, because as good as it was to be able to hold races despite COVID, there was something missing, and it feels like that thing has been back for 2022. Memories have been made, new friendships forged, the community comes through stronger than ever, and we will carry on carrying on. So look out for more updates from us in due course. But for now, thanks for listening. Thanks to everyone who's played a part in 2022. And we hope to see as many of you as possible in 2023. Bye for now.